Welcome,
Matt Howie.
Welcome,
Jessamine.
Welcome to the Metafilter Podcast.
See, hello and welcome to episode 94 of the Metafilter Podcast. I'm Matt Howie.
I'm Jessamine West.
And I'm Josh Millard, also known as Cortex. And see, you guys have the easy names because you can say your name and it's like your username or vice versa. And then I have to
say my name, say my name.
So this is July and everything from June 4th on counts.
Today is July 7th.
And this is podcast 94. 94 is a Smith number, which is one of these fascinating and super confusing things in which the number is the sum of the digits in the number are equal to the sum of the digits in its prime factorization. So like 9 plus 4 is 13, and the prime factorization for 94 is whatever the hell it is, and they're the same.
That sounds like a baseball stat when they're really reaching and you're watching a game.
Well, I think the Smith number is really reaching, but the thing I think is really interesting about it is the Smith numbers were made up by this guy from Leahy University who noticed this about a phone number of his brother-in-law, Harold Smith.
Oh, nice.
And the phone number is 4937775, and the guy just happens to know that that's 3 times 5 times 5 times 65,837. No one knows that.
Yeah, factor enough, that? Maybe the stuff starts to just be, I don't know.
The phone number looks interesting, but still, to see that is that guy.
And one of the prime factors is 65,837? Seriously?
Maybe he was just working with that number recently. He's like, oh, yeah. I don't know. I've seen some people just have a real weird affinity for managing large numbers.
You'd have to see
so
the world.
So that's the part
that
I like, is that Smith numbers are crazy, and the origin of the Smith number is pretty interesting. Other than that.
Why didn't he call it the Herald number? It's nicer. But Smith is good.
Like
they're
and,
they're
know,
also called name. Smith numbers because they didn't get into Wesleyan. Is that the order that would go in?
Not the order that would go in.
Well, someone can take that joke and workshop it.
Tell you you're not very good at jokes.
I'm great at jokes. Ouch. I'm just not very good at waiting until they're done.
Ladies' schools.
I'm like an incredibly talented chef who tries to serve it while it's still
You're thinking
cooking.
Of Wellesley.
Oh.
Wellesley's a women's college, and that would have made sense.
That's probably what
it was
going for.
That's what I thought you said.
Oh, wait. No. Still wouldn't have.
Oh. Either way. You could just turn it around and say, call a Smith number because it didn't have to fall back on its, what do you call that? The reserve school? The
safety school.
Safety school.
Yeah. It's safety prime number. Did we go right to jobs?
I didn't look at jobs at all this month.
There's a whole bunch of jobs, and they're like normal jobs and stuff. But the interesting job for me was
the bike rack.
Remake a bike rack base, which is kind of tough to do remotely. I think I would hope the person could make all the measurements. Like you kind of need.
Also, you're not a woodworker.
You need the old one to trace to cut. It would make it a lot easier, but.
I have to watch a video to figure out what I need to do to fix a bike rack?
It cues right up to a shot. Yeah, it's loud. It cues right up to the bike rack, and you can see that wood base. I can see that just like the plywood separating in the rain and stuff. But
That's cool. I get it.
There's a million other jobs, like actual account executive jobs. And
there's
like,
an actual job near me for the first time basically ever. Oh, that's nice, Josh. You put a thing in the thing and then a little thing popped up. And now I can't make it go away and I can't get it back to my window. For those of you who have just joined us, quit pasting shit in that box. It's ruining everything. We've all updated our Skype.
And it's awful. It does everything worse than it did before, which is why
it does a lot more.
I didn't think you could do
like
everything
years.
Worse.
It has a lot more that it doesn't
so
do
wait,
well.
You got to buy a penguin sweater, but look,
yes, that was
Terrapin
cool.
is looking for AppleScript help for the community radio station. Unfortunately, I cannot help with AppleScript.
Oh.
Oh, copy editor for fiction. I could do that.
Yeah. Ooh, so you need someone to copy edit their fiction, so... So there you
I
go.
I like science fiction and I read fast. I also like Ooksier, so that might be fun. I'm not really looking for work, but in order to get unemployment, you actually have to look for like 3 jobs a week.
Yep.
And there aren't 3 jobs a week that even interest me, much less ones that I can apply for. So everybody on Metafilter who has a job that you would like to turn me down for, let me know and I'm going to type your number into a box
How do you prove
so that,
that
I can tell the state of Vermont that I tried.
You just send them URLs of job postings?
Oh, I wish you could send them URLs.
Oh, right.
You have to tell them, like, who you applied for a job for, who specifically you talked to, and what their email address and phone number is. You can't leave the phone number field blank, so I just keep putting in the number for, like, Vermont directory assistance. And it's just, it's degrading. It's terrible. It's frustrating. Like, I don't mind not working, but I really do mind... this a horrible website. I'm going to write Ooksie or an email and say, I'm going to apply for this job. Turn me down.
Turn me down for what? Womp, womp, womp.
I love that song, Despite Myself.
I like it ever since I saw the video. Now it's mind-blowing.
Yes. I saw the video before I'd ever heard the song because everybody was screen-capping it on Milkshake.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand what was happening at all. And then I watched it.
How about we go to projects?
Let's do it.
Only if you say it right.
Projects.
It's projects.
Projects. To the back of the audience.
Someone is ringing my doorbell. I don't know why.
Oh, I might have a Verizon guy come and tell me why my phone isn't working during this podcast. In which case, I'm going to have to go.
A landline or cell?
Yeah, there's a landline at my dad's house. Oh. And it works sometimes, and when it doesn't work, it fails big. Like, you go down to the network device, and you plug a phone in, and it's dead.
Hmm. Salt
so it's
water.
Probably something outside. So they gave me an entire day window where the guy might show up.
Man.
I know. It's another just completely ridiculous thing. But we need to have a landline for the... Oh, whatever. I should have
So there were a couple of cool video projects I like. One was a...
Oh, I liked one of them too.
Yeah, stained glass stop motion. I make stained glass... make stained glass windows for a living, and it's just a stop motion of, like, I don't... Is it an 8-hour day or something of making a... It's amazing.
I don't know. I watched it. That was on my list of things I very much loved also.
And it's great to fast forward, and it's just becoming more of a stained glass window, and it's a massive... I wonder if stained glass used to use so much lead, and the people who made stained glasses, you know, used to go mad from all the lead. I wonder if it's de-leadified at this point.
I would assume so, but why don't you ask our friend who just made this giant window, hey, are you going mad? Yes, sir?
If you go like a minute before, there's a weird sand over the whole thing that gets wiped off. I don't understand.
Somebody asked about that in the comments. Oh, was that you?
No.
No, Rich B asked about that in the comments. It hasn't. It has not been answered yet, but...
It must be a polish or something, because it gets kind of brighter when it goes away, but still weird. But yeah, it was beautiful. It was pretty cool. Oh, here was a strange... This is why the podcast exists, I think, is this weird and project. Why projects exist is post by TSS, the Open Class Nationals. This is them blogging their adventures in a glider competition.
Yeah, you skipped the word soaring, the soaring competition.
Oh, right. Where's the soaring? Oh, they didn't put it in their titles. Yeah, the Open Class National Soaring Contest in Northern California. They basically go from, like, I don't know, above Reno, Nevada, like all the way to Crater Lake in a glider, and they pick out places with mountains next to deserts where hot thermals can be in the air for like 6 hours, kind of. It's crazy. They got one vote from me, and nobody left a comment. It's so cool when you go through it. It's crazy. You go through these
and this
posts.
Guy's been a Mephite since 2004, 2002?
Yeah.
Long time. And a co-pilot.
Yeah, and it's like they take apart this glider. They drove from Pennsylvania, pulled it behind a minivan in parts all the way to Nevada, and then put it together, and then flew it each day. And, like, the blog isn't really... yeah, click into the post to see, like, an entire day. But, like, they log their time. They have to, like, test the air. And there's a day where they were one of the test planes, and they said it sucks because, you know, you go up early in the day when it's not hot yet, and there's no uplift, and... You know, you kind of have a terrible time versus, you know, beautiful glides. But, yeah, it's just, like, crazy amazing photos of, like, lakes and mountains and stuff from high above. They have to use oxygen tanks. They're so high up, which is crazy.
Wow.
Like, I had no idea gliders went that high, you know, like 30,000 feet or something where you need an oxygen tank. It's crazy. Like, I almost want to interview them.
No, I wouldn't think so either.
Like, they'd be a fun interview because I have so many glider questions. Like, like, how do you even know? There's no gas, right? So how do you know I've got to get to this airstrip to land? How do you know when you're done for the day? You know, is it a ceiling height or a distance from it? Or it's weird.
Right, because you've got to just kind of like...
glide
into the thing. So if you overshoot it, you got to turn around and do the stuff. And,
but there's no gas. It's crazy. It's
wow. Well, that's neat. That's a really cool blog.
Yeah, and the posts are pretty nice. They have lots of nice photos and stuff. What does co-pilot do in a glider besides provide ballast? I guess you're like a navigator, maybe.
Yeah, you're probably, like, checking all the stuff while the person who's in the front is, like, steering and doing the stuff. Yeah, the navigator, maybe the radio operator, maybe, depending.
Man,
I mean, they're backup for the pilot, I think. We should ask TSS. We should, you know, call them up and
have them on the podcast.
I got so many gliders.
Do you eat? Do you bring sandwiches if you're up for hours and hours?
Leave a comment, Matt.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
If only there was some way to, you know, get answers to these questions.
To interact with people who leave information on the internet,
web.
If
yeah.
only.
There's just no way. I'll send a telegram.
Turns out the person who really wanted me to answer the door was a guy going around just trying to hard sell impromptu lawn mowings.
Oh.
Yeah. Nice. Good for you for not answering the door.
Well, but then I did, and then
the natural.
And I said no. He said, do you write checks? And I said, what? And we did that like four times. Because apparently what he was saying, could you just write me a check? And I was like, no. I'm not going
a
to
check?
Just,
yeah. Who even does that anymore besides me?
Yeah, I know. It was kind of odd.
Does your lawnmower take Bitcoin? I mean, it's 2014.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he thought that I didn't want to try and pay with cash rather than, no, I don't want you to mow my lawn. It was weird. I don't know.
Do you guys mow your own lawn, or do you have a kid?
Yeah. No, we do our own. It's not that much
lawn. I have
a
guy. I'm thinking about switching to doing it myself.
I did it myself in my first house, and then I had a push mower because I wanted to be all environmental. Oh, my
God. Wow, you get over that fast.
Yeah,
I went through that phase.
You go on one vacation in July, and you're done. You can't do
it.
Like, if it goes beyond 2 inches, you're done. So then, yeah, I pay a guy at the new place, but Jesus.
Oh. So crazy. I also enjoyed
plug yourself.
No,
do the Cortex thing.
You can plug me. No, I find that tacky. Not that I don't love Josh very much.
You find it adorable and, you know, and charming.
Adorkably tacky. I just can't do it. I'm from New England. We can't even talk, much less talk about ourselves.
See, that's just a bad way to be. You gotta be okay with being enthusiastic about the things you're enthusiastic about.
The Twitter bio for everyone from Maine or Vermont should be like, go look me up in the newspaper locally.
Don't want to know about that.
I was in the newspaper this week. It was so exciting. I performed a wedding, and the people who got married did like a wedding announcement, and it mentioned me as the officiant of the wedding.
That's awesome.
And I was like, look at me, I made the paper. It's different. Okay, Josh, I'll work on it. I'll work on my attitude,
I will
work on this.
I believe in you believing in you.
Okay.
In plugging,
so,
yes.
Well, you know what happened, right? I posted that thing where I showed people my new, you know, I used that HTML5 template and I made that new web page. And then it got posted to Metafilter, not my page, but the HTML5 page too.
Yeah.
And then a bunch of people were snots about it.
What? About what? About yours?
They didn't like, not mine personally, but just the thing in general. They were like, this is ugly and stupid.
It's free.
And I'm like,
God.
And it's a nicer looking website than what I had before and what most of the world who doesn't have designy chops has.
I was
so
amazed.
This is the thing. You stick your neck out and nerds piss on you.
Right. It wasn't the latest, greatest, but like everything looked great. It was responsive. Like those were amazing templates.
I thought so.
Your personal.
We'll talk about that when it comes up.
Right.
So I was interviewed for this, for Mr. Mustard. I didn't know Mr. Mustard was this other guy who contacted me and said, do you want to be on my podcast? And then I saw this project afterwards. But basically, it's a podcast called Ignoranti, and Mr. Mustard has a delightful British accent, and we talked last week. And I don't think I'm up on the podcast yet.
That's what I was going to ask.
But we talked a lot about, like, books, e-books. You know how, like, when you talk about it, you're like, I'll totally talk about a topic that I totally know about, but then they start talking about stuff that you don't totally know about? And so you're like, oh, yeah, it's totally like, oh, God, don't quote me on this because maybe it's totally not. Like, shit, am I still talking? Oh, God. So it might be kind of weird, but I had a great time talking to him.
When they asked you about libraries or?
Well, we just started talking about, like, you know, the sort of ebook marketplace nowadays. You know, like, well, with everything ebooks, what does that mean for libraries? And what about Amazon? And what about all this shit with Hachette? And what about blah, 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 blah? Like, there's a lot of people who are have deep knowledge about certain sections of this. Fewer people who have kind of mile-high knowledge of at least a little bit of all the sections. You know, like the library angle especially is one that a lot of people don't know about. So I was talking about that, but I was just treading. I was in the weeds a little bit. I mean, I'm only telling you now. I hope you can't tell. But you know how when you're saying a thing and you're like, oh, God, the internet's going to freak out about this because I don't totally know what I'm talking about. That doesn't ever happen to you guys, does it?
I feel like that, like, at least once every podcast we record, honestly. I just play it off. I'm like, yeah, no, I'm sure about this bullshit that I'm just...
My podcast pet peeve and fear both is when you can't recall the name of something, because I've been on both sides of that, where I'm sitting here going, what's the thing the guy was in? And, like, and I know when I'm listening to podcasts,
and everyone's
I'm
like, Jaws?
It's Wolverine! It's fucking Wolverine! Would you just shut up and say Wolverine? God damn it! Like, people are going, and the hosts are going back for 3 minutes going, God, what was the guy in the thing with the claws? God, what's
Well, at least we're sitting near a computer while we're talking, so that at least helps. When I was talking to this guy, I went to my telephone couch because I was... You know, I believe
like
on the phone. Actually, now I don't even remember. Maybe I wasn't. At any rate, I was trying not to talk and type at the same time. So we'll see what it sounds
this,
like.
This reminds me of there's a really good podcast called Like I'm an Idiot, which is a similar vein, which is Josh Kagan, this sort of comedy writer guy in L.A., had a show where he just invited his friends who are experts on something and just go, I don't have time to read the newspaper, so tell me again how the Electoral College works and, like, have someone...
That's great. I would love to be on that podcast.
It was super fun. It's super fun because it's really focused on one topic and you just find an expert and... what's his name? Brian Mason explained the Electoral College because he worked for the Clintons and stuff. So, like, it was really good. Yeah. And just because Josh is completely self-deprecating, like, he doesn't know anything about these things, so it's good. And then I wanted him
Josh,
to be
the
on
other
it.
Josh.
Yeah, that's right. Josh. Yeah. I want him to be on his own show to explain how the fuck, like, comedy TV writing works or movies and punch up.
Barely.
And all
that. Timing! What?
That's good.
Speaking also of podcasts about having things explained, there's another one that I haven't gotten a chance to listen to this, but I'm excited by the write-up. Another project from – this would have been right about when we recorded the last podcast, and I don't think it came up yet. Regret Labs science podcast from A47 Danger, the pitch is that Eric and Levi talk about something they don't know about, and then they have a guest expert on to explain exactly how incorrect they are about their failed understanding. So the same sort, it's
nice.
Something in the air. I don't know, but I'm excited about checking this one out. I just haven't gotten around to it because some are busy.
Ooh, neat.
Nice. That sounds good. I need to drive around more so I can listen to more
I know,
of these
I
things.
I wish I had time. Like, it's easy to make time to read a book, but to listen to a podcast, it's hard to carve
out. I have a little stack of Metafilter swap CDs from the swap that ended about 2 months ago that I'm like, I need to be sitting near something that can play CDs that I can listen to these, but not working so that I can actually pay attention.
See, podcasts are pretty much entirely car time things for me.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, that's when I'm doing something that I have to not be doing the things I would normally be doing that are distracting. So,
well, and I've had, you know, guests in my car. Like, when I drove down to Massachusetts this time, I drove a buddy down with me. So, you know, we chit-chatted and listened to baseball games and stuff.
Well, you can do both. I don't know. I guess me and Angela driving around, like, we know that we have a lot more future opportunities to talk. So if we don't specifically feel like chatting, we can put on a podcast and both listen to it. That was actually a tricky thing. We just went to up to Montana to where my
12 hours.
Dad's. Yeah, well, 11.
Right.
But, you know, it's a good long drive. And I was kind of thinking, oh, my God, this is going to be great podcast time. But the thing I didn't really think about when I was thinking that is it was me and Angela and then my friend Brian and his two teenage daughters. And we kind of, like, none of the podcasts we listen to are necessarily filthy, but none of them are guaranteed to not at some point be briefly ironically filthy. And so it's like, I can't really say, hey,
that's
no.
the problem with your ironic filth, people.
Yeah, you got to know your own. And I don't think...
It's still filthy.
I don't think Scott Aukerman's worried about that. I mean, I think it's...
Oh, my God.
Comedy
Scott
Bang Bang
Aukerman.
Is a program for adults, you know.
Right.
But that's the problem. It's like, I couldn't be like, I'm pretty sure there won't be a two-minute thing about Gary Marshall talking about the time he lost his virginity. You know, I can't be sure.
But they're going to make a crazy fisting joke every 40 seconds, because that's how they roll.
Right.
Oh, man. Scott Aukerman sticks out as, like, the most straight-laced guy with the filthiest imagination, like...
When you get him down, going down that road,
When he does stand-up, you're just like the darkest, craziest stuff from a guy in a sweater looks harmless.
And improv Canadians. That's I do improv Canada. That's my
improv Canadians is a thing.
The thing about an improv comedian is like, you know, if they're gonna go dark, they're gonna go dark and deep and just run with it, because that's what you do. You know, you keep it rolling. Yep. And so let's take this fisting bit that we didn't know we were gonna do as far as we can.
Let's start at zero and go below that.
I hear that.
So there was this Globetrot video that was posted. I liked it so much, I waited a day and saw if anyone else had posted it, and I posted a Metafilter. Aww. It's really cool. It's like that Where in the Hell is Matt sort of thing, where it's like 50 zillion locations around the world. I could name probably a dozen of them, and I felt pretty cool that I could name a dozen of those places. But it turns out it was completely crowdsourced, where they had like a dancer come up with this wacky choreography, and then they assigned people in every city how to do that. And then on top of that, they gave them sections, like, just you're just going to do this, like, 50 seconds to, you know, a minute and 20 seconds of this dance, you know. And, oh, yeah, and here's how you frame the shot, like, super detailed. And in the end, the edit looks, you know, pretty good and professional. And it looks like they had a film crew in 23 countries, you know, recording this dance.
I'm watching it right now. It's brilliant.
Yeah, the funniest part is when you go to the how-to section and, like, how to frame your dancer. Like, it's really detailed. Like, you know, they need to be 40% of the frame, and they need to be standing here. But the practice dance stuff is funny when you watch, like, here's how you do the dance. Here's how you do this part of the dance. Like, it's hilarious. And it's
by Mitch L.A., who's basically only made this one post to Metafilter ever, but has been a member since 2011.
Yeah. I gave him the benefit of the doubt.
Well, that's fine.
Yeah, it's such a nice little movie. It's just like, Where the Hell is Matt?
But if you posted it to Metafilter, you should drop the guy a email maybe and just tell him that, you know, because that's kind of cool. He would like to know that.
He sent me an email afterwards, thanks for posting it. And I was like, you know, it's neat. Like, what? Why would I not do it? Like, it's great. Like, it's all the joy of, like, Where the Hell is Matt? Like, spread out with all these people.
With a little less Matt.
Yeah, with a lot of people of different... you know, body shapes and dance abilities and stuff. But, like, the video is surprisingly all very high quality. Like, it doesn't look like one of them was shot with an iPhone or something. Like, it's all edited really well.
Nice. I've just got one more quickie for projects, which is just this little Tumblr blog that just has photographs of objects from eBay and Craigslist listings. And there's just something mesmerizing about looking at all of these things together.
It's completely sold in the very first image, which is like a weird army man ultra close up
with funny eyes.
Yeah, and then
there's a lot of like army men. I don't totally know.
There's a
dashboard. Some blurry thing, sets of bowls and cake pans and artificial hearts and Mickey Mouse's and a sideways Godzilla and like a Zip-On head. What the hell?
It's a sideways scroll, which is weird too, but fun.
Sideways scroll, yeah.
Just hold down shift and mouse wheel and you're all set. Hold down shift and mouse wheel.
Oh, yeah.
Hold down shift and mouse wheel.
I'm not telling you. I'm suggesting. I'm providing a mechanism.
My mouse wheel's too slow.
Oh, no. These are muffin pans. Oh, I see.
I really like the focus on...
Have you
on,
seen
like...
the muffin pan? The muffin pan.
So many pipe fittings. I had no idea people were selling
And like army men and like army astronaut men and little mini
Barbie
Pikachus.
Shoes. Just a collection of Barbie
See
shoes.
See what I mean? Like it delivers significantly more joy than you would expect. This is by King Felix, by the way. And it was posted to Metafilter by Zingcat, who I actually recently met. which is not how I found this, but is cool.
No, because it's
and
like
it didn't
it's
get a ton of didn't get a ton of comments, but there are some interesting copyright questions here, says Crib Cage.
I really like it. It's like a study in accidental, like, you know, juxtaposition of color and composition stuff, because there's
agreed.
There's so many nice color backgrounds in contrast with each other, and the typical product listing framing becomes so so established, looking at all these different images, doing it slightly differently, but still having that symmetry and centering and the border of the frame and the angle of the approach. Yeah, that's
my
neat.
Thoughts exactly.
It's neat.
I had one little one that I like too, from Ignocknicked. Ignicknocked. I can't say it. But anyway, a little thing he made, a Twitter bot that posts tributes.
I saw this. I kind of loved it.
Yeah, it's just riffing off the structure of, you know, blood for the blood god. And so instead it's, you know, every kind of thing for the thing god. Weefs for the weef god. Steam rams for the steam ram monster. So a little bit of variation. Pugnancies for the pugnancy god.
Mossies for the mossy goddess.
Pretty cool.
Yes, no, I enjoyed it. And it's funny also with Twitter's kind of new layout, because some of them are bigger than others, which I think has something to do with
relative number of stars and retweets, I think. The ones that stand out proportional to other ones get
bought up.
Which just makes it look funny. They're expecting soon, which is very exciting, too.
It looks like
it's going to be another Metafilter baby on the way.
Yay.
On the way.
Well, Dostoevsky's for the Dostoevsky god.
All right.
Metafilter, maybe.
Maybe.
You tell me which way we go, because clearly I can never remember.
That's quiz time. Which is it next?
Metafilter comes
Write down
first.
Your answers on a piece of paper, and we'll reveal them all at the same time.
In this stupid video window that we're not using for anything else. All right. Well, I'm supposed to mention this because, of course, I always query Jim about what's good on Metafilter because I have my own tastes and they're very narrow and niche-y. And he says he thinks this is the best post on Metafilter all this year, which is basically timely only because World Cup.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It's people who are in the stands and just fucking around, and then they throw a
paper
airplane onto the pitch, and then it hits a guy in the head, like a player.
Oh, God,
and
yes, I saw this. Oh.
Yeah, it's great because it's like a wait for it that goes for a minute.
Yeah, you're like, what is this? Is so stupid.
Right.
Stupid. Oh, my God, you know.
It actually happened. Yeah.
It actually happened, and it's kind of a short Metafilter thread by Beerfilter. I think eLizardBits had the initial comment, which summed up my feelings. That was delightful for reasons which are difficult to articulate, but which I nevertheless feel quite strongly.
Oh, man. I would say this is a crazy month for posting with the July by Women Project. Like, everyone's...
Which we should maybe mention.
Yeah, I want to introduce it now. Like, it's a great idea. Like, we should just get more women posters, right? Because, you know, maybe historically... Women are a little bit afraid to post in open forums for, you know, could be shit on by idiots, you know, that
maybe.
Might happen. Yeah. So, like, someone's back the envelope calculations was, what, 8% of, you know, 1 month's posting appeared to be by, you know, people that marked off their gender as female and Metafilter.
Which is tricky in its own way, because the people who didn't mark it are probably more likely to be women, but whatever.
Yeah, and if we have a 40% audience of women or, you know, are close to 50, you know, why isn't it better? So, you know, there's more posts by women, and they're fantastic, and it's not just, you
know. Wait, you didn't introduce it at all. So, Vigorlija basically was like, let's do something about it. And so they had a MetaTalk thread, which was terrific, about, like, let's get more women posting, period.
The funniest part was we're going 90 posts in a month. And I went, God, forcing myself to post 3 times a day. I was just thinking of how much work that is. And I was like, man, maybe that's too ambitious. But I think, you know, we hit it by, really, you know, the 5th or something.
Yesterday, 2 days ago.
They're at 110 already.
Well, and the points that I think people make is that these aren't necessarily posts on women's issues. Some are, but most really aren't. It's just posts by, like, posters you haven't heard from before, which in and of itself is cool. And the fact that they happen to be women is just good news for Metafilter overall, because people should feel that the site is theirs, regardless of what their sex or gender is.
Yeah, and
and women are very equally represented on Ask Metafilter, so it's kind of a good way for people who may have only explored that part of the site to view the whole site as theirs as well.
Yeah, and when I thought about this, you know, the best scenario in my mind was like all these people, all these women had an idea for a post, you know, in the back of their mind. And that seems to have happened. It's great. There's posts about all kinds of crazy stuff. And it's like,
you should post in the MetaTalk thread and say nice going because you're, it's your site. You should say that you like
it. I thought I had, but I
you didn't. Control F for your own name.
Yeah. I was definitely going to, you know, say something that like, man, this is turning out so good. So
it really
great.
Is. It's been very, very cool.
So, yeah. So I think everything I've picked is probably a July by Women post. Like today's this morning, this crazy Twitter bot that reminded me of this one. This Pangram tweets. Looks for tweets with the entire alphabet in a tweet.
By Ginger Beer.
That seems, by Ginger Beer. This seems like a supercomputer problem, right? It's ginormous to have, find a tweet with every letter in it. And some of them are people mashing the keyboard, but some of them are just completely innocuous, which is weird and crazy. And I'm honestly wondering, how do you even do this?
Well, it's not necessarily that hard to get all the letters in there. The tricky part is doing it in a really concise way, which is why we have a couple like standard memorable things.
Oh, no, I'm amazed at like, how do you scan the Twitter fire hose?
That's easy. You just, I mean,
computers.
not to say, oh, well, it didn't take any work, but like the naive approach at least is easy, which may be sort of inefficient, but basically you can take it and, you know, you go through and every, like set up like a 26 entry hash table or something, and each one represents a different letter of the alphabet, and you go through the tweet and you increment the value of each hash entry every time you find that letter, and then you get to the end of the tweet. Does everything have a non-zero value? Boom, you've got a tweet. Otherwise, throw it away and go to the next one.
Hmm. That's efficient.
Yep.
Sounded a lot like blah, blah, ginger beer.
it's worth it. Hi, ginger beer.
Some of these, I'm just amazed how they got the X and the Z in.
I know. I'm reading it, and I'm like, there's no X in that. Oh, right. Of course
there is.
Some
of them are like, oh, hey, I was having a rough night. Then I watched Netflix. And I'm like, oh, God, that's where they got it. But then, and then I realized, and that's how they got the Z in. And you go, oh, they got it. But it's great that people don't even know they're doing this as they're doing this.
Well, and the worst thing is every once in a while it's like, oh, there was an X in the bit.ly URL, which is, what do you do? But,
Oh, I just sounded, there's some porn in it because X's show up in porn with X's. Crazy.
Triple X.
But it was pretty cool. It's a funny, funny, funny project. And one of the friend zone comment is hilarious. It's in there.
Oh, I'll just read it out loud. Shut the fuck up about the friend zone. Maybe you should just value a woman's friendship and quit expecting them to fuck you. Jesus fuck. I think even without the Jesus fuck, it actually hits it. But
I see
that was pretty.
The X is, where's the X? Oh, expecting. Wow. And I love the quote by that. Seriously, that should be used for every font preview. Because I've been staring at fonts lately and they have these nonsensical phrases.
Or it's like quick brown fox and you're super sus. Yeah. Nobody knows what a fox is nowadays.
Yeah. So
I guess they do.
That's the thing that we don't know what
video.
It says, right? Are you not a fan of what does the fox say? Or are you just tired of it?
I was tired of it when it came out, but Saturday Night Live did do a very hilarious send-up called What Does My Girl Say? That was really just worth having that other song exist at all.
See, and I liked that less than the original. I felt that one was getting a little bit into weird territory, whereas the first one's just outright nonsense absurdity that I was more behind.
Good point. You'd have to kind of like all the characters in SNL to like seeing them in sort of a send-up. But
yeah. I'm a few years behind at this point, like... I saw
you be
like,
a few years behind and still claim you're even on track.
When did I claim I was on track?
What does a few years behind mean?
2010 or so. So like,
but that's not behind. That's not even on.
What? I can't parse that.
Matt, you know what I'm saying.
I zoned out.
And this has been another successful discussion of comedy on the Metaphor Podcast.
Timing! Is this where I talk about my post?
Yes, talk about your post.
So I made a post, even though I post fairly frequently. July by Women has gotten me more inspired to find the books I'm reading and find interesting things about them. This is not one of them, actually. This is from like a random mailing list I'm on. But it's basically a guy who wanted to make a backup of his ebook, and he's kind of like a nerdy guy from Portland, Oregon. And so he photocopied his Kindle every time he changed a page to make a physical backup of his Kindle.
What?
As a joke. I mean, he knows it's a joke, but it's kind of like a funny, stupid art project that he calls ebook backup. And if you look at it, it is funny.
It's funny because the Kindle shows up in the scan. That is funny.
Yes. Yes. It's funny because the Kindle shows up in this scan. And he's also done projects such as learning to write in different fonts because, you know, we all write in like the same font, sort of.
Oh, my God. Teaching himself to write.
Yeah,
wow.
A video that's just all newscasters staring that winds up having
really
kind of a surprise ending. And maybe my favorite, just because you can get it just by looking at a couple pictures, the iPhone 1 case for the iPhone 5.
That was also nice. I really enjoyed, someone mentioned in the thread, someone mentioned the What If the Simpsons Was Made in the 90s.
Oh, which was another project he did.
Yeah,
right.
And I thought
what?
That was, I really thought it was beautiful. He took the Simpsons... He basically cobbled together a new opening montage for The Simpsons.
Oh, nice.
Using some, you know, mid-90s inoffensive music and different, and VHS tracking.
And like were we watching VHS movies in the 90s? I guess we were
watching. Yeah, DVDs are like late 90s.
Yeah.
Okay.
People are still taking
shit. But like
shit.
The Simpsons did exist in the 90s, which is kind of partly why
that's
funny.
That's the whole thing. It's like it's applying this wonderful sort of like, what if it was retro thing to something that's it's totally time inappropriate to retroize it, and yet he just does it with a completely straight face. And I sat there. I was so pleased with it. I was like, this is the best fuck you of a joke I've seen in a while. It's wonderfully
understated.
And
I kind of love this guy's profile photo.
Oh my God, this is so...
I feel like we should be friends with this guy.
Yeah.
That's nice. That's some Halloween party stuff.
Oh my God, that's the greatest.
And so I just found that and could not believe it was not a Metafilter. Because normally I'm like, I read this esoteric bullshit and here's some weird fact about the esoteric bullshit. Like right now I'm reading about Tater Stand. T-A-T-R-S-T-A-N. It's like a part of what used to be Russia. And so that's going to make a great Metafilter post at some point, but it's a little inside baseball. This is accessible to anybody who uses the internet.
This is amazing.
I thought you'd like it.
I feel like I may have seen one of his things somewhere before, and I just had never like made the connection or anything because it had a weird familiarity, but I hadn't seen most of it. So yes, I really enjoyed that. That was
if you run into him on the street in Portland, please tell him Metafilter says.
That's the other thing. It's like he's local. I should try and get him to come out to a meetup. It's like once you've been posted about on Metafilter, you are a Mephite by the strict legal definition because your name appeared
or the
on
transitive
the site.
Property.
Yes.
The every lightning strike in America right now map is amazing always, like at any time of day. Let's see if it's amazing. It's not super amazing right now, but it's amazing during storms. It's pretty cool.
Oh, nice. It's just real-time strike.
Yeah.
Wow,
it's like
Florida.
It's like the wind map. You know, summer thunderstorms in the south is basically what's going on.
Well, we did, of course, have the 4th of July almost entirely wiped out by like a hurricane, stormy, lightning bullshit. It would have been fun to watch this like 3 days ago.
Did it go all the way up to New England?
It didn't. It went through Massachusetts. So we got a rainstorm after the fireworks and then it was fine. But like Boston just got... hammered, and then the South Coast got super hammered. So I missed most of it, but
It was the same thing as that hurricane in North Carolina stuff.
Arthur,
like,
I guess,
whipping up there. Wow,
I guess so.
How did I collect the data on the strikes here? I turned on the detectors thing, and I'm seeing long lines from like 1,000 miles away.
It's a lightning detection network
for the location of electromagnetic discharges in the atmosphere based on the time of arrival, several lightning receivers, and one central processing server. The stations transmit their data in short time intervals over the internet, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Neat.
It's a community of station operators.
I will have to read more.
Crowdsourced.
But where is the API with all these geolocated, I don't know. Somewhere there's a feed, but yeah.
Oh, if you want to make better looking data viz than this?
What? Have you seen the wind map? I mean, that one's glorious too, and that's
it is glorious and a little better designy, honestly.
Totally, yeah. And you go, how do you get all that data to make all that beauty? But yeah,
the government,
the government,
our wasteful spending.
I liked this. This is one of those classic like posts that gets almost nothing, but it's why I like Metafilter. The Man of Twists and Turns made a post about the articulatory IPA, as in International Phonetic Alphabet.
That and, other post was by Theodolite. I feel like we should mention everybody's name because like it's romper room.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway, it's a YouTube channel that collects videos of like tube down the throat, or in some cases, whatever, the side slice MRI or whatever imagery of people pronouncing various things as sort of like.
So you can see the difference between real and real. Is that what they're saying?
Yeah. So you can sort of actually see the shape in the mouth and the throat when people are actually pronouncing.
So if I press play on any of these videos, it's going to be this gross medical thing of someone's throat.
Yes.
I will take your word for it.
I'm going to look at one and I'll tell you. Ah, gross!
Yeah.
All right.
It's the it's the wonder of the human body, guys. It's, you
do you
know,
remember
it's the
when
miracle
the learning,
of, you know, et cetera.
The learning channel
to
used
be
to be
fair,
like that 24 hours a day.
Mine was just like a side x-ray or MRI of somebody and it wasn't gross at all.
Yeah.
I didn't learn anything either, but... It definitely wasn't gross.
Like I said, it's a niche post. Not a lot of people responded.
No, I maybe voiced alveolar fricatives just like the next person. I just, you know, missed it the first time.
Yeah.
Matt, he's squeamish.
Yeah, I just, medical video. I'm not in the mood right now. I'm curious.
I'm gonna excerpt that, put on my phone, and wait for the next time I happen to be around you when someone's like, oh, do you want to see the ultrasound? And I'll just like pull up my phone and play, and then you'll feel so awkward.
No, I think that's a no. Are you kidding?
That's what
that
I should do
work
with the next 10 years of my life is wait for that moment.
That might work.
Hey,
you're not going to have to wait 10 years. You'll have to wait less than a month is my
I'll start getting desperate and I'll like have women put pillows under their shirts and then start up conversations. Pretend to be pregnant, a pillow under the shirt, and then strike
all right,
up
I didn't
a,
understand
you know,
this post, Matt,
Josh,
that you're...
Yeah, Josh, I'm curious what you think of the This Is Phil Fish video, because it's kind of fantastic.
I didn't...
By J.K. Leho?
Yes. I feel like I need to watch it, but I haven't
from
yet.
From Finland.
You need to sit down and watch it, because we all know Phil Fish is kind of this, like, you
we
know...
We do not all know anything. Who's Phil Fish?
Phil Fish is an independent game developer who's also sort of notoriously kind of arrogant and loudmouthed.
And he's kind of a lightning rod
and
for
sexist,
indie.
Or is he just a loudmouth?
He's kind of a jerky loudmouth. But
and
he,
sexist or just a jerk?
I think of him as just sort of neutrally jerkish. Yeah. Like,
okay.
He's more like,
but
fuck
he's
you,
not
my
known
ideas
for being one of those guys.
Yeah, no, not that I know of. I think it's more just like, hey, fuck you, I'm right about this thought I had. I know what I'm doing and I'm smart.
Like
and
Richard Stallman.
Yeah. Keep the fuck up, yeah.
And I only know him through the video game movie, like, and I played Fez maybe for 15 minutes once. I never played any of his other games, but he's famous for basically having these big, splashy announcements. I'm going to change the video game industry in my next indie game, and he wins awards, and he gets tons of funding, and then sometimes they don't come out for 5 years, and when they do, people are sometimes disappointed, but he's turned into, like, the most hated guy in indie game world, and this video is amazing in that you don't even need to know him. It's more about, like, internet culture. And I can't believe I sat there and watched a 19-minute video for all 19 minutes because I was going, I was fast-forwarding and it gets bored, boring.
So wait, what's the upshot of the video? I mean, I'll watch it if you say so, but...
It's basically like, here's this guy, he's kind of a loudmouth jerk, and he's a jerk to people on Twitter. That's kind of his... I would say that's the weakest, you know, support of him. If someone goes, hey, Phil, I hate your game, he will tweet back to a random stranger, like, you know, a normal person would take the high road. He'll tweet back, like... Fuck you, I hope you die, or something really childish and dumb and mean, and like, I can't abide that. That's stupid. But this is like 20 minutes of like, how did he get so hated? Why is Nickelback? Why is Carrot Top? Why are all these things these code words for things everyone hates, right? Like, why did it become a thing? Like, it's amazing.
Right. How does a thing become a thing?
Yeah, and it's just about internet. By the end, you're like, maybe you shouldn't hate Phil Fish so much. It's more like you should kind of hate the internet a little bit, and here's how things spiral out of control, and it's amazing. It's kind of just an incredible video. And Taz put it on the Best Of blog just because it was made by a Mephite, I think.
Yeah, peevish, it looks like.
Yeah, and it's really, it's really well done.
You guys should put more stuff on the Best Of blog.
We should.
There's so much stuff going on right now. It's hard to pick.
What? It's hard to pick? That's your excuse?
Just pick. Pick at random.
Well,
I was in a lake. That's my problem.
I don't work here. That's my problem.
Also, I got stung by a bee yesterday, so that buys me a couple days of time.
Didn't you say it was no big deal?
How does that buy you more than 15 minutes?
No. It's a little bit swollen today.
I stepped on a bee like a week ago, and it was no big deal.
It was a big emotional, it's a very internal, you know, a revelatory, emotional couple of
minutes.
You didn't
have anaphylactic shock or go to a hospital, did you?
No. That's the whole thing. The fact that it was
like
a total non-issue.
You want to slap your 12-year-old self? Like
no, I just
said
that maybe my 11-year-old self was kind of a baby about the whole thing.
About bees? I don't even understand what the conversation is.
I was at a barbecue. It was at Mr. Zarquan's place. He threw a barbecue.
That man is a mensch.
And he made the meat he smokes. My gosh. And setting up a game of... it's called cornhole.
Like you do.
Cornhole's great. We're setting it up, and just suddenly my toe hurt very bad. I was like, what's that about? And I was like, oh, perhaps I got stung by a bee. And I looked down, and there was a bee stinger sticking out of my toe, and I gave it a quick swipe with my finger, and it came out. And then
I was like, ow, my toe hurts.
That's how you do it, which I've internalized, but never had a chance to really put into practice. And then I was like, ow, my toe hurts, but I got the stinger out. And then, 10 minutes later, after some cornhole, I was like, oh, my toe's fine.
This took you 3 days to get over, and this isn't why you couldn't post to the blog.
There was a lamest possible excuse for why I hadn't posted.
I see. You were fine.
Yes, I was fine. I was like, the fact that I was fine, because I really don't like bees. And I don't like bees partly because I got stung a couple times as a kid, and it was a really unpleasant experience. And not like in an anaphylactic shock way, just in a, as a kid, I was not someone who responded well to sudden, inexplicable pain, and
in a fuck you bees way.
Exactly. Sure. So it's like, I'm sure I will continue to, avoid bees and swat at them and whatnot. But it was a little bit nice of a reality check to say, oh, that was not as bad as the dentist.
Better than the dentist.
Maybe I can be a little bit more laid back about.
Do you think because we are smaller people, like we're a third of the size? I had a bee sting when I was 11, and I had one like last week, and that's my life history of bee stings. And last week was the same thing. It was in my toe. I went, oh, that's weird. Why does my toe hurt? And I pulled it out, and I was like, it swelled for like an hour, and then went away, and I don't even care. But when I was 11, my entire arm puffed up, and I was like in pain for 2 days. I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe bees are getting lamer than they used to
that
be.
That could be.
We bred the
lameness. I used to get bee stung. I don't think I've been bee stung in a while. Or if I've gotten bee stung lately, I don't even know about it because I was like, whoever knows? You got itchy things that bite you all the time.
My cat came in last night with one paw 4 times the size of the other paw. The cat didn't even seem to care. We're just like, oh my God, what's... And then we woke up in the morning and their paws are the same size. So it was probably a bee sting.
Or nettles. Sometimes with the cats.
Yeah, it worked itself out.
So I just wanted to point this out. There's really not much to say about it, but Community's coming back on Yahoo Screen.
Yeah.
My favorite channel.
According to Small Dollar, who is a newish member.
They can probably release it whenever they feel like it because it's not TV. That'll be
cool. Assuming it's going to have Dan Harmon in it, and it just made, internet people very happy, makes me very happy. But the thread was kind of fun because it's a lot of grab-assery about Yahoo and, whether you should even watch season 4 or, is it season 4? The lousy No Harmon one?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the darkest timeline. At any rate, brief post, worth knowing. Everybody, yay, hooray.
There was a post about a game inspired by Candy Box called Space Lich Omega. This is a post that Jay Bickers made. This is an incremental game. It's not. It's more in the Candy Box vein than the Cookie Clicker vein.
Is Candy Box like Bejeweled Blitz or what's it like?
No, it's Candy Box was inspired Cookie Clicker.
It's an ASCII-based web RPG. Why do I even ask these questions?
I don't know. But Candy Box is what inspired Cookie Clicker, although Cookie Clicker went in a different direction with it. And then I have three candies already. Yeah,
wait.
See? Oh, wait, are you playing Candy Box now? You're supposed to play Space Lich Omega. Oh, my gosh.
I don't care. I'm playing Candy Box. You shut up.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good, actually. You should play it. I'm trying to trick you into playing it. That's it.
So, wait, this is just a clicker?
Candy Box is one of the old ones.
Cortex, you've done it again.
Yep. You can play. Yep, that's basically why I wanted to bring it up. I didn't even like it. I just wanted to get you hooked. No, it's fun. It's just a neat thing, and I always enjoy
incremental RPG.
I always enjoy.
There's
when
a church
we have
in this
posts.
One. To hell with it.
Well, there's a demon in the church.
Oh.
Yeah. So it goes somewhere.
I'm sorry. Go on.
Yeah. Anyway, I like posts about them because I like watching people sort of collectively. Pick it apart and figure out what's going on and how you do things. And the inevitability of a comment somewhere in the thread from someone saying, I can't actually play this. I think someone said, I can't play this because it's blocked at work. So I'm just going to presume that you're all just doing freestyle improvisation role playing here. Because if you read this thread and do it on the assumption that there is no such game as Space Lich Omega, you know, it really kind of reads like a weird creative writing exercise. So makes me happy.
Yeah.
I enjoy those things.
Well, now I like the Space Lich Omega, but it's nothing like that other one, Candy Box. They're different.
I would say Space Lich Omega sort of presumes you've played Candy Box, and so it's like jumping in a little bit farther development than where Candy Box starts with just the candy.
All right.
But they do similar things. There's a strong lineage there in the design once you've played through both.
All right.
I love this post on the history of Entertainment Weekly because it's filled with people like me who I don't know why I had.
Oh, I read this.
I had free Entertainment Weekly at my house in college, and I'd never watched TV because I was in a lab all the time or doing homework. But I read EW like on the toilet because you got 20 minutes a day to do that. And
you didn't have a phone yet.
And I would know all the storylines of Melrose Place or whatever shit or the contract negotiations for the next movie for people. And like I took no part in media, but I read Entertainment Weekly religiously in the mid-90s and loved every minute of it. And
that was like me 10 years ago. I got a free subscription somehow, and I needed to keep up with TV so that I wouldn't fail at trivia.
For trivia reasons, that's awesome.
Well,
that's totally true.
I used to read the alt weeklies. I'd read the movie section, the reviews in Willamette Week and in the Portland Mercury when I worked my old desk job at the insurance company. Partly because it was boring and I could get away with reading, and partly because it meant that I could keep up with random conversations about movies, even when I hadn't actually been watching all the movies. You know, I mean, I didn't pretend like I'd seen them. It just gave me any context at all, and so
it's, so you did it for water coolerness, yeah.
Basically, yeah.
That's important.
It's
That's
funny.
Why I know anything about sports.
I did it because I like watched 8 hours of TV like an idiot kid as a kid, and then I didn't at all in college, and I realized I'm gonna have to reenter society at some point, you know, and know. What's going on?
You don't have to. You don't have to.
You can always be the guy that doesn't own a TV.
Well, I like now one of the side effects of like Netflix culture is there's like a whole secondary class of people who aren't watching TV up to date, but still have a shared experience of, oh, but it was or is on Netflix. So like, you know, I'm 3 years behind, but so are like 30% of the people I know. And we're all exactly the same 3 years behind. So we're like, yeah, season two of that show that's on season six this fall. That was a great season. Let's talk about it. You know,
it's really hard to figure out people at a party have also seen some Croatian soap opera or something you're watching online only. Like it's hard to find those people, but it's great when you do.
Right.
I had some strange conversation about something that was British only and it was 10 years old, but I'd just seen it and someone else had already. Yeah.
We're working through season two of Parks and Rec. So every now and again, I can tell people and they'll be like, oh yeah, I wonder what happens to, and you're like, don't tell me.
Oh, you haven't gotten to the part. Yeah. I don't want to spoil it.
Well, although if you see the ads for Parks and Rec on regular TV, you kind of know what the arc is, but yeah.
Well, and that's the whole fanfare thing. The thing we'll have to continue to figure out and why we added the checkbox so you can hide synopses is the idea that even something that's not in any sense of the word a spoiler in a malicious way for the current state of a show could be a spoiler to someone who just is a couple seasons behind because you know
somebody's still alive or not alive or whatever.
Like the mid-season episode where something happens that involves a married couple who got married at the beginning of the season. It's not a spoiler for anybody's watching. And I was like, oh wait, they're married. I forgot the last six episodes I watched. But if you're like three seasons behind, you're like, who the hell is Jane? Or like, wait, they got married? You know, it's like, so it's
how
it's
does
a
that person
thing.
Have a baby? They're not even married
exactly.
yet.
Exactly. So it's a tricky problem. It's the whole sort of like flattening of media it's got some weird side effects to it.
I also want to ask you, Josh, about this post about algorithms. I went to go make this post because I found it on Twitter and was like, oh my God, it's amazing. I'm going to go to Twitter.
By Quiet Earth.
Yeah, I'm going to go to MetaFilter.
Wait, there's
and
no
post
Y
it.
In algorithms?
Nope.
Sorry, go on.
Oh, yeah, there is.
That solves
there
some
the
problems
word rhythm.
For me.
Those are the two words when my daughter gets them on her spelling test and asks me, how do you spell rhythm? How do you spell algorithm? I'm like, I wait till the red squiggly pops up and then I right click. I do not know how to spell those ever. But it's this great post. I went to make it and it had been made for me a day before by
Quiet Earth.
And it's great. It's this like, it's great. I don't even understand half of it, but it's great for explaining what an algorithm does and how you make things that look like art using math and how you introduce like random noise and like it goes on and on and on and on and on.
This looks very neat. I have not seen it. This was posted during my my dead week at the lake where I didn't look at Metafilter at all that whole week since we managed to get Lobster Bitten to be able to cover my shifts. I just like, okay, I'm just going to put the computer down for real. And so I missed this and, you know,
yeah,
200
really,
other posts.
It has really cool visualizations of mazes and things breaking down. And as you
and
scroll,
it explains things in a way that's, you can get your head around even if you're not super apt in these things.
Yep. Yeah. It's really cool. Rent
yeah. This is super
buy.
Neat.
Oh, neat. And, like, the site looks exactly like Edward Tufte's books. It looks like he obviously is trying to make a Tufte book. It's very
without
cool.
Without the snooty. Without yeah. the snooty.
Yeah, this is really cool. Oh, I guess you can see a video of the talk. Oh, it's not up yet. Bummer. But, yeah, it's very cool. Very, like, it reminded me of going to see the math dude in at Powell's. Like, you know, like these beautiful descriptions of math that are interesting to non-math people like me.
Which math dude? Jordan or somebody else?
Oh, yeah, Jordan. Oh, what's his username again?
Escabe. Escabe.
Escabeche. Escabeche.
Oh, shit. It's even worse than that.
Escabeche.
Yes, he has a new book out, How Not to Be Wrong.
I read it.
Yes. He has a... Oh, how
you
is
read
it?
The book?
Yes, it was good. That's I've what got... I did at the lake instead of fucking around on Metafilter,
oh,
it turns
nice.
Out. You can read books when you aren't looking at the internet all day. I'd forgotten.
You can also read books when you are looking at the internet
all day. Yeah, it's
harder,
though. I bought a hammock. That's helping.
Good for
so
you.
I've been doing some go outside and just take a book and hey, you know, I might
good.
Finish a book I started reading last year now.
Good.
Was it like cool stories about math?
It's really interesting. It's a nice mix of sort of interesting bits about math history and sort of the development of some mathematical concepts and some of the bumpiness and weirdness that comes when real human beings are the ones trying to do science and ties that into modern stuff, ties it into, you know, a big part of his thesis is that we're doing math all the time in the way we think about and reason with and interact with the world. You know, we're estimating, we're dealing with probability. You know, and some of these things we do pretty well without knowing
we're
it.
We're doing
some
risk
of these things,
assessment.
Yeah, and
yeah.
some of these things we do very poorly without realizing how poorly we're doing it. And it's arguably a failure of the way we approach teaching math to people that people don't realize how much they're being shortchanged on their ability to, you know, handle situations well because they haven't been taught these sort of weird counterintuitive concepts that aren't hard to learn. They just seem imposing because it's math, you know, and it's always calculus too. You know, he talked about, you know, calculus at the book reading as sort of like it's the big wall. Everybody like gets as far as calculus who gets that far. And, you know, some people are like, oh, okay. And other people are like, wait, seriously,
calculus
I've lost
the
fucking
wall
plot.
For me.
Yeah. Well, it was for me too. I mean, and I thought of myself as a big math, like precocious math kid.
Really good at math otherwise.
Yeah. Calculus is just, it's a very specific thing and there's almost no intuitive grounding for it for the average person, I think is part of the problem. Like I love geometry because like, yes, I know exactly yeah. what I'm looking at because we're drawing a picture of a thing, you know,
right.
Calculus was like, I don't have a way to think about why I care about the area under a three-dimensional curve. I'm just like, oh God, I don't want to do any more derivatives.
Can't I mostly
numbers?
Just wave my hands and mostly average it and be mostly right? I'm not building a spaceship.
Yeah. And the thing is you can. And if you have the tool set to get it mostly right, if you have the tool set to understand that you got close or understand basically what it should be and know whether you got the exact answer right or wrong, if you have an understanding of what sort of answer you should expect from something,
right.
then you're in pretty good shape. And he talked about how when he grades papers, if someone gets the answer completely wrong, but they did a bunch of work And they get the answer wrong, but they've also written a note saying, hey, I think this has to be wrong because, you know, this can't be a negative number because it's the amount of water in a bucket. Then he'll give them half credit, you know, whereas if somebody else did it all impeccably and then wrote down that wrong answer and made no note about it whatsoever, then, you know, they don't get any credit for it. Because if they are managed to write down, you should have -4 liters of water in this bucket, they are not understanding what they're doing, even if they're doing the mechanical stuff mostly right. So
that picture of you guys is lovely.
It's fascinating how hard. Nice night. Like, why isn't calculus, what can we do to little kids to make calculus? I would go home from college exhausted as if I worked a trail crew all day when I had a calculus class. Like, my head would hurt. I would be so tired from trying to wrap my head around calculus.
It wasn't great.
A bridge too far.
Well, this book talks very little about calculus, and when it does talk about it, talks about it in a way of talking about it. So don't be afraid that he's going to be like, no, for really, I can teach you calculus.
I read one of those books, too. It was like a women's guide to calculus or something, and it did not help. I don't know what my problem is.
Calculus is just, it's conceptually hard to get on board with. I think it really is.
No basis.
I feel like
in
I conceptually get it. I just, I can't hook it to something in my life very well.
Yeah, or exactly.
Like, I never thought about 1 over X approaching infinity, and I never wanted to. And I was forced to. I don't know why.
Anyway, How Not to Be Wrong is an excellent book, and I strongly recommend it because I enjoyed it a great deal.
It was a great meetup. And
I'll actually, we're not on camera, but I'll hold the book up like this is the end of an interview segment on a show.
So, How Not to Be Wrong
in bookstores, Jordan Ellenberg.
Get it.
Thanks so much for being here.
There was some weird math guy who knew you, but not through Jordan. It was weird, and he couldn't explain why. He said, it's too long of a story. I don't
know. What's his name?
Douglas something.
Oh, Doug Wolk.
Yes, that sounds right.
Yep.
Sure. How do you
He's not a weird math guy. He's a weird music guy.
Oh, right. Yeah.
He's he also is a math guy, probably. Yeah, he's on Metafilter, and he knows Library and friends of mine from a long time ago.
Oh, okay. Yeah, everyone had a long time ago Jessamine story. Jordan.
Well, because I haven't been on the West Coast for a while.
He was very nice and soft-spoken, but yeah, we never found out what the hook was.
The dealio.
Well, and he's a friend of Jordan's, and I think we're all like on a mailing list together or something like that.
This was the most amazing post about Bob Dylan. Did you read this story? It's so incredible. Some guy is like, I think his sister died or his parents died. And he has some giant building in New York, and he's about to wreck it and sell it. It's sort of an,
over in Houston on the Village, in the Village.
Yeah. And apparently Dylan rented one of the bottom studios as a studio once because he lived around the corner. And that's all he knew. And this guy's going through this building that's about to be sold and as part of a giant estate thing. And he finds this box in a closet he forgot to even open, like in 4 or 5 sweeps. And there's just all these weird acetate recordings. And they're like, they look like they're Bob Dylan recordings. So he calls up a Bob Dylan expert, and there's this blog post written as this Bob Dylan expert who's like, I put down the phone and bought a plane ticket and went to New York. Like, and it was this amazing story of basically, and this is the thing that cracks me up. So acetate recording is like this temporary record you make, like right there with like a metal lathe, and you can only play it 20 or 30 times. It starts to break down. And
right. They're basically things that people, you could make it in kind of, they had these DIY recording booths that you could get to that would make just kind of cheapy, you can't play them very often records.
So they talk about in the history of the record industry, acetates were mostly for like the end of day. So if you're, you know, Bob Dylan, and you've been recording all day, you'd make a cut of your best song of the day. And you'd go home, like wait 3 hours, go eat dinner, re-listen to it, come back to the studio tomorrow and edit, you know? So they had these temporary acetates. This weird one was they had so many, and these are all unknown. These are all works in progress. His producer was in Nashville, and he stayed in New York. So this literally is the emailing a Dropbox link to an MP3 that you do today. Like, everyone I know who works with a record producer doesn't live in the same city. They exchange Dropbox accounts, and they just send MP3s to each other, and the producer goes, oh, I'm going to sweeten that up and send you an MP3. This is the 1968 version of MP3 swapping. And so there's 149 records. They have notes written on them. Like, that's the email part. We're like, I like the organs. Bring up the vocals. Like, they mailed them back and forth to each other. And then the guy says he took a picture of the front and back of every single one, and he digitized the recording. He played them once in a perfect environment. But
and he says that Bob Dylan owns the rights to all the music, and so he can decide what to do with the stuff.
Yeah, it'd be
that's
great.
That's the follow-up by Soccer Mom as the very last comment.
Yeah, it'd be great if this stuff ended up on the archive as MP3s you could press play on. That was the only part I was, you know, was bummed out about.
Right, but, great story, but still kind of a what?
It's a great story about how I found someone's private property. Yeah, it's kind of tricky.
Yeah, right. Oh, that's still way under copyright and stuff. And the person's selling some of the discs, so it's a little weird, but I don't know. I don't. It's pretty cool.
Well, because that's the thing. You can sell the discs, but right. The IP belongs to Dylan, right?
Yeah, it would just be great to hear what these in-progress songs look like, but yeah. It was a really cool. It's a fun, like, really long blog post that started off the post.
I really enjoyed a weird thing. This is a post about Rocco's Basilisk, which is basically just a kind of thought experiment that a few people on the internet are very, very taken by in sort of a weird, silly internet drama way. But the idea is basically... It's all singularity stuff. It's imagine the singularity in the form of a super powerful supercomputer. Some AI comes along and changes the world by being so smart and so powerful that it manages to, you know, whatever, deal with scarcity issues. All of a sudden, we enter the utopian future of, you know, no more need, no more want. Everything is great because the computer can solve all the problems, and people can probably upload their brains into the Matrix if they want to. You know, all those. There's a wide variety of ideas of exactly what this notional sort of sci-fi utopia future would look like. But a lot of them come with the idea that, okay, you get this great, hugely powerful, sentient AI that becomes part of our experience of the world.
Which you see in fiction all the time.
Sure, yeah. And you see it utopian and dystopian. I'd say usually it seems like it comes up dystopian. Like Skynet obviously is the bad version, let's say. You know, the computer comes online, it becomes self-aware, and it blows us to pieces with nukes or the Matrix or whatever. But you could also make the argument of like, oh, no, actually it's just part of making the world better, you know. In any case, you can imagine the idea of a friendly artificial intelligence that basically values humanity and values human values that decides...
And helps make us all awesomer. That's the
right.
WWW Wonder. That's the book that I read is super about that.
Yeah. So you take that idea. You have this AI. It's this incredibly powerful thing that can do things like simulate people. You know, we can run basically simulated versions of people. It cares about humanity. It wants humanity to prosper. And you go through this tortured reasoning that someone came up for on the site Less Wrong, which is a sort of rationalistic place. But this whole idea is kind of weird. If you go through the reasoning, you basically say the AI knows that it is making humanity better. The AI knows that making humanity better is important. The sooner it can come online, the better for humanity. So it should motivate humanity to bring it online faster. And one of the ways it could do that is by...
holding us hostage and starting to kill people until we do it?
Well, you know, torturing for eternity simulations of people who knew about the possibility of bringing online sooner, but failed to do what
they
could. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but if you look at it just right, it does, is basically the argument.
But that's implying that the AI is malicious.
Well, no, it's not malicious. It's doing
torture doesn't solve a problem, does it?
If the threat of torture incentivizes solving a problem, then there's a utilitarian argument.
I see.
You could say it's that whole same argument that, like,
I think internet guys fap to this stuff.
I think that may be what it comes down to is there's a lot of really, really questionable assumptions that people aren't necessarily on board with that makes this idea work. But the idea is
talk about.
And if you take them all as true, if you take it as true that the AI would try and motivate people through this, basically, if we can imagine that the AI the basilisk here comes in is the idea that by telling someone about this idea, you've now put it into their mind that they're aware of the possibility that by helping the AI come along sooner, they'd be helping humanity. And so if they then fail to do everything they can, the computer will... in the future, punish them by torturing simulated versions of them because maybe because you know it will do that, then you'll be motivated to give all your money to whatever the Artificial Intelligence Institute or whatever it's called. It's a weird, crazy thing, but it was kind of a fun, interesting discussion about it and trying to figure out where there are and aren't philosophical grounds for some of this stuff. And also we had one weird band user tried to sign up twice and got banned again twice in it, which was an odd thing right in the middle of the thread. But
my favorite part of the whole thing is that they're all linking to the Rational Wiki for these write-ups. And one of the footnotes is something about transhuman.
This is by Crazy. You have to say who it's by. It's the rule.
One of the footnotes on the Rational Wiki is talking about transhumanism. It says, the singularity is near. And it says, citation not needed. Which is amazing.
Yeah, the Rationalist Wiki is really interesting to read because how much of it is in its style and aesthetic, specifically reacting to dominant Wikipedia themes in its own
way. If those guys are
way.
So right, why aren't they more popular?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
I was stoked to solve a 20-year mystery for me, which was which exact Kelvin panel is the Peen Kelvin? In my mind, from the day I saw it, I went, oh, I know there's a panel where he's like in a corner plotting and he's rubbing his hands like ha ha ha, or he's filling a water balloon, or he was just about to do something evil. And I remember
he's not
the panel.
Peeing in a corner.
Right. Yeah. But you can tell, I'm like, I know what that's from and I never could find it. And it's in this post, about the Kelvin peeing decal and the changes, how it turned into Kelvin praying and how.
By like, Figurant.
And it's great about the history, basically the long history of the horrible Kelvin Peen decal and how much Watterson completely hates it. Like he never
hates
licensed
it.
Anything. And then the one lasting thing we see is like the worst possible representation of Kelvin. So sad. Such a crappy thing to go down in history for. But that was fun.
It's a great post.
Anything
Let's move
else on Metafilter?
Should we ask? Should we get our ask
sure.
on?
Sure.
I think so.
Shake All right. that ask.
Here is something that is near and dear to my heart, which is, help me un-peanut butter my breakfast. So, ever since I've been a little kid, peanut butter is like one of my staple proteins that I enjoy the most, besides sort of the meat-based proteins that are not as good for you.
It's pretty
and
great.
And so this, yeah, and so this person basically eats peanut butter sandwiches for breakfast, so that they can sort of make it to lunch, but now they're trying to sort of do some health and maybe weight loss, but I don't want to have a bowl of cereal and blah, blah, blah. And so a whole bunch of people talk about good things you can have in the morning that are tasty and peanut butter-like without being peanut buttery in order to keep your blood sugar up. So Jessamine bookmark, because this post is useful for Jessamine.
Man, I never even thought of having peanut butter during breakfast. I never have.
Peanut butter on pancakes with a little bit of syrup? Oh, man.
PB2 powdered peanut butter is a thing? I've never heard of it.
It's a thing, but it's kind of disgusting, and it's got a lot of sugar in it, but a lot of people like it because if the fat content of peanut butter is what your problem is, it can sort of solve that problem.
This person doesn't like oatmeal, and that's my go-to.
Oatmeal can be a little
boring as hell.
Well, I like oatmeal because you can spice it up with stuff you really like, but it can also be a little carby if what you're trying to do is not have like a kind of a glycemic-y crash afterwards.
But
everybody's got to kind of find their balance, and you know, the sort of American standard breakfast of like cereal and toast and whatever. I mean, eggs are good and whatever. It's a nice thread.
What do you
about
do with peanut
to...
butter besides peanut butter and jelly sandwiches?
You put it on English muffins. You put it on crackers. Oh. You put it on toast. You put it on Triscuits. You make little grilled sandwiches with them. You put them in paninis. You
put it on celery.
Yeah, you can mix it up in yogurt or oatmeal.
You
put it on
a
celery.
Smoothie.
Yeah, you dip apples in it.
Ooh,
you,
apples, yeah.
I don't even know.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah,
basically everything. You take something and you put it in the peanut butter. Boom.
What can't you do with it?
I just, when I think of it as an ingredient, all I think is sandwiches or I guess as a spread.
You gotta broaden your mind, man.
I should have more peanut butter in the morning.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
I mean, it's good if you're a person who exercises early in the day, too, because the calorie hit is not a non-problem and it means you've got something in your stomach.
Sweet.
Yes.
My favorite, I know it's your favorite too, Jessamine, is what are some interesting things about Microsoft Excel?
Yes!
Which is like the coolest, craziest roundup of crazy shit. Like,
by Scotto17.
Flight simulators, paintings, like just all the, there's tricks, there's actual formulas to, that people pasted in, things you can do, like all this weird stuff where you can figure out how many days you've been since you've born, like in the smallest possible way, like... Oh, man, so much Excel stuff I did not know.
Well, because for a lot of people, you're sort of forced to use it for one reason or another, and it's nice to know that it can do a thing that isn't quite so shitty while you're doing the sort of boring snore stuff that you have to do with it.
Yeah, I remember in grad school learning way more about Excel than I ever knew with, like, data sorting and stuff when I had big data sets of stuff. Like, all I knew was basic sum, average, you know, median, like, all the little shortcut formulas.
Sure.
But there was a lot of stuff. I had to teach Paul the other day how Excel syntax, he had never written it out in his life. He'd always like highlighted
just
a
clicked
column,
a button or copied it from somewhere.
He used the buttons and stuff. I was like, you write equals, you write sum, open parentheses, hello, why is this new to you? It was funny.
Wow.
Yeah. Some of us just, you know, never had.
I mean, they have UI for it. So I think I had Lotus 1-2-3 on an Apple II or something. So I always knew some.
Well, and they didn't use to, I mean, I've been using it for long enough that they didn't always have as much of the UI for it.
Right. Excel games you can download.
Love it. Love it. Yeah. I enjoyed that post.
Nice.
I enjoyed this question about tricked out. And this is actually from, I want to say, going on 2 months ago. This is a question from
say
Circular.
Say the user's name.
Circular.
Yes, thank you.
Yea, verily, wast he tricked out with many fineries, is the title. Basically, they discovered that, tricked out is old phrase, you know, and they're sort of like, hey, what's the deal with this old phrase? It's this new phrase now, too, and what else is like that? And people managed to put together some sites and collect a bunch of different specific examples of stuff, like an O. Henry story where Willie says, "I'm trying to look fly," but yeah.
Wow.
Newfangled appears in Chaucer. This is great.
Newfangled, definitively not newfangled.
I thought we had a post about this like 2 or 3 years ago about
Probably.
like new phrasing and really old stuff. But yeah, was this the thing that was picked up in the New Yorker too? I think this is...
No, this was the one that got picked up by Flavorware without a lot of attribution.
But wait, what was the... Oh, that was the Asmat filter one was different, the New Yorker thing. I thought it was this. I saw other people pointing to this, so I thought it got wider. But yes. Yep, that's crazy. Look and fly.
Yep.
One of my favorite things in that sort of so favorite because it's the predictable people doing their predictable things is every time some poor fool walks into Ask Metafilter asking for information on buying a coffee maker, everybody comes out of the woodwork and tries to explain why you've got to get the Chemex with the glass handle and the stuff just so that you can make the perfect coffee for basically the guy who used to have an espresso machine. And by saying an espresso machine, I don't mean an espresso machine. I mean a machine called a Nespresso machine that makes fake espresso. So this is by Blah La La, who's just trying to do the right thing and help Mr. Blah La La get a new coffee maker. And we basically go through, 20 comments, most of which are completely ignoring the fact that they want something normal. So, you know, you get AeroPress people and the Breville people and the this people. And I stepped in and stepped right back out again. And at any rate, I think Mr. Blah La La is going to be fine. But it's just, you know, I look, I smile. I walk away.
I laugh. That reminded me of a Chris Hardwick joke when he came to Portland. He said, I came to Portland, I went and got a donut and a coffee, and fuck you, I'm not going to tell you where I got them because I know I picked the wrong place, and you guys are going to tell me that there are 4,000 better places I could have gotten both items. Like, So, yeah, that was very hilarious.
I saw Waxy had mentioned in somewhere on the XOXO blog for the upcoming 2014, he'd mentioned something. I think it was talking about hotel accommodations, and then somewhere in there said, and yes, voodoo is still overrated. And
this is a thing we all know. Yes. It's good.
Great. But they're still fine. And for somebody like me, Voodoo Donuts is amazing because all we have are donut shops that sell donuts.
Yeah, and I like Voodoo. I mean,
like normal donuts. Like Dunkin' Donuts has every available donut selling license in the New England area, so there aren't other donuts.
Yeah. I personally still like Voodoo.
They seem fine.
I don't know. I get tired of local tiredness with local things sometimes because there's like Voodoo Donuts. It's almost de rigueur to shit on it. And you know what? You should not plan a major culinary experience of Voodoo Donuts, but go buy a fucking donut. You know, it's a tasty donut. It's fine. They do a good job.
Right,
they put bacon
good
on it. It, you eat it if you want to eat a donut. It's not a big fucking deal. You don't have to like get all defensive about, oh no, but don't go to Voodoo because you know, it's the same thing with McMenamin's beer. McMenamin's is this big chain here.
I've been there. We've all been there together.
Yeah, and it's perfectly fine. It's not the most brilliant beer in Portland, but it's reliable, good beer, and they got a nice spectrum of beers. And it's like everybody wants to shit on. It's like, oh, don't go to McMenamin's.
This is the Phil Fish. This is the Phil Fish movie.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
This is exactly it.
So yeah.
Which is, don't just hate on. Oh, I was at a comedy show in Portland where people were hating on Voodoo Donuts, and someone had to one-up someone to hate, and they were hating on Salt and Straw, and then the host went off on the person in the audience. Like, you're just trying to be a dumb hipster, you know, where you hate things that are popular, but Salt and Straw is fucking great, you asshole.
I don't even know what Salt and Straw is.
It's just it's a local ice cream chain.
Crazy
ice
cream. Really local. And, yeah, they've got, like, four locations maybe, including food carts or something like that.
Wait, I want to hear your eyes roll. It's called, literally, Farm to Cone. So it'll be like Rogue River cheese with, like, blueberries from down the street. Like, it's amazing. They're all crazy.
Where does the milk come from?
Cows.
Tillamook, probably. Which
you know
is
how far away that is? My milk comes from cows I can walk to.
Your state's tiny. That doesn't count.
I'm in Massachusetts. It's a little bigger.
It's still tiny. That New
Boston.
People in New England don't know how far states are. I mean, you know, because you've left, but still. You can't account for things. You have to account proportionally.
You know, though, city people think they're all farm to table when they're all
farm to freeway to table.
Right.
It has to be, but oh well.
Right.
I love this post that solved a mystery in my head, which was by Randall Patrick McMurphy.
Terrific.
How do they issue parking tickets so fast? You know, there's all these crazy smart meters. Is there, like, an iPad app in the parking meter person's, like, cart that they know when things are up? And someone's like, yes, that actually does happen, that these outside companies come in with a contract and they write software and they get a cut of the ticket money. Like, I was in Orange County a year ago at a funeral, and there was this crazy smart meter that I had to download an app on my phone just to pay the damn meter. And it took, like, 20 minutes, and all my cousins were like, just put it in goddamn quarters. And I was like, no, this has to work. It's supposed to work. I had to, like, scan a QR code. Like, it was a nightmare.
Wow, nobody uses those things.
I know. I want to prove, like, how ridiculous. It took 20 minutes to pay for my meter. But then, you know, it texted me when it was up.
By then, you got 20 free minutes at the meter, though, because you're just standing
true.
There.
Yeah, and then I got it to work, and it pinged me two or three times, and I was at this all-day reception, and I forgot at the end, and I got a ticket, like, you know.
Anyhow.
8 minutes outside of the time or something, I had a ticket, and I went, what? They must know. So, yes, there is a thing where they actually know that stuff. So I was just glad to get that mystery solved.
Good.
Stupid parking.
I enjoyed this post. Stupid parking, stupid automobiles. This post by Puppet McSockersons, not to be confused with Soccer Mom, who is another sock person we mentioned today.
One of these days, I'm going to do a rundown of all the usernames that have
sock
in them. Yeah.
I think that's a great idea.
Sock Puppet.
So basically, this was like, hey, me and my husband like to watch sets of movies, you know, so we want to watch all the Bond movies or all the blah and all the blah. But, like, it's a fun experience to sort of be with your buddy and have kind of a set of movies you walk through. So I'm looking for good sets of movies that aren't, like, giant but that, you know, we can spend a year or half a year just watching a lot of movies on a theme or by a person or whatever. So people come up with sort of some of the standard suggestions, and of course there's a Wikipedia list of films by common content, so you can just watch lists of films featuring diabetes if you want to, killer toys, Hindu mythology. But you know, Mifites are a creative bunch, and they came up with a whole bunch of great suggestions. So this was my favorite list generating post for the month.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. No suggestion of watching every Christopher Walken movie, though. I might have to go in and leave a comment. No, there isn't. I just searched
not a
mention of Walken, which, to be fair, is maybe not the best way to get a collection of great films, but it'd be a great way to get a collection of films with Walken in them.
They don't have to be great films.
Exactly.
That's your whole point.
So I might go forward my thesis after we're done with the podcast.
A couple years ago, I tried The Month of Statham, where I had to track down every single Statham movie. And after like eight or nine Statham movies out of the 25 or so he'd done, I mean, I just never wanted to watch another Statham. He's still awesome in the kick-ass action movies, but I had to watch him be like a villain in dumb movies. Like, oh, there's some garbage.
Yeah. But that's kind of what's fun about it. If you're just hanging out with someone you want to hang out with anyhow, the fact that the movie's garbage is not.
I like how it's like doing a movie podcast without the podcast. Thank you.
Timing!
I also enjoy. I think I just added a slash to that accidentally when I pasted that in. In a similar theme, there's Brandon Batchelor had a question about recommend some nonviolent TV, which basically, hey, you know, let's watch something that Game of Thrones is great, but maybe something without all the stabbing and rape and so on. So it's just a nice sort of collection of, oh, yeah, well, here's, you know, good TV that maybe gets
no
around
British
that if you're not
comedies.
The mood for it.
I was all set to write Doc Martin in at the bottom.
Yeah, I mean, I don't exactly agree with him there because he has terrible taste.
Comedy.
But
terrible taste.
Aside from that. It should be more challenging, like dramas without violence. Like comedies are easy without violence.
Well, that's, you know, so it goes.
Oh, I like no laugh track. That's good. I hate laugh tracks. I liked this anonymous blog post about how to start an anonymous blog about being an escort. Not really the subject matter. I don't really care about the escort part. I just think, like, what is the state of the art of trying to be anonymous online?
Because this is excellent question.
I would love someone to just put this in a time capsule for every year going back to 95, because I don't, especially with the NSA stuff, I don't think it's possible now. Like, some human somewhere, even with all the Tor and all the crazy stuff, like, someone somewhere, like, has access to a log file that can probably find you. So people are just basically piling on the Tor pile. So it was cool that there's a lot of
Well, it depends how anonymous you have to be, right? If you just need the blog to be anonymous, or you need to interact with people and talk to them and blah, 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 blah.
I don't know if I'd trust any mainstream blog host. You know, there's so many humans at WordPress. There's so many humans at freaking Yahoo. You know, you can't really have a Tumblr blog. You have a Tumblr blog appear anonymous, but, you know, humans in the back end know who you are.
I just heard my driveway alarm, so I may have somebody coming into the house just warning you.
Oh, wow. I am almost done here.
No, that's all. It's just it beeps when somebody drives into the driveway, which gives you some time to, like, put some pants on or whatever it is that you want to do.
Pants alarms.
I am already wearing pants.
Sweet. I have no more asthma filters.
Oh, well, I had a couple more. My favorite one, well, I always say they're my favorite, but this is by Peach Eater, who I recently met at a meetup, who asks about the difference between going to a library for doing ebooks versus getting physical copies of books for kids, and whether or not there's a difference, you know, the pros and cons of actually having books in your house, because her and her partner have, you know, they're trying to downsize so they don't have that many things in the house, versus, like, you have a kid and, like, you know, the kid wants to, like, touch books and have things that belong to them. And is there a difference between using the library and having your own books and not? And so a whole bunch of people talked about it in the thread and have a whole bunch of different reflections. And it was interesting for me to read, because I, of course, have my strong feelings, but other people have theirs as well.
Huh, weird. I'm going through that right now in the same exact way. I'm basically not buying too many more physical books. But I just gave my daughter one of my old Kindles, And she was all stoked to have The Hobbit on the Kindle. It was all new. But, like, a year from now, will she be stoked on a whole bunch of new books on the Kindle? Because it's not, like, things you can touch or see.
Well, and for a lot of people, you know, still reading books from the library is kind of an interim between just digital books and filling up your house with books.
Right, yeah. We always have a weekly library trip. I forgot about that part. Yeah,
but so it is an interesting thing to think about because, you know, it's clearly a different user experience.
I've passed peak book in my life. Like, we have, for the first time in my life, I have more bookshelves than books. Like, we built up extra bookshelves in a couple rooms, and now, like, one of them's half full, and I don't think I'm going to buy at the same rate I always have been. And, like, we may have open bookshelves with more art pieces on them in
right,
the future.
Right, right, right. I buy a lot in the secondhand market, you know, for me. So I'm always, like, picking up, like, six things at a book sale and being like, I'll read two or three of them and then keep the other ones around or give them to people or whatever. But, you know, it depends. It sort of depends what your consumption patterns are. Maybe you need a hammock, Matt.
I had one. They're too high maintenance with bird poop and...
A hammock is too high maintenance. I can't relax because it's too hard for me to relax. Is that what you're saying?
It was hung between trees at a stand that was deteriorated. It's a whole nightmare. I'm sure Josh solved it though. He probably has a good hammock with good trees and stuff.
I just sit on it in the afternoon when the shade of the house gives me shade, and it's a 9 foot long frame. It's sort of a short frame, but we take the hammock and we put it on a frame and lay down the hammock. And then when we're done in the evening, we take the hammock off the frame, take it inside, and that's the whole thing.
I have trees with a hammock between them, and I just go sit in it outside. But you can use a chair for the same thing and sit in it and read, you know.
Yeah, no,
whoa.
I know.
Whoa.
But a hammock's a hammock, man.
Do you know there's Brazilian hammocks? I feel like all kinds of hammocks.
I feel like when I lay in the hammock, I haven't been able to figure out how this works. Every time...
Blood,
like, if I'm in there
head
for a while, I'm like, I really have to pee afterwards.
Oh.
And is it something about, like, the posture?
Because you bend in a funny way in the middle?
Or is it that I usually wanting to lay in the hammock correlates with wanting to drink a beer and maybe having had a bunch of water earlier in the day or something? I don't know. I can't figure it out. But it's a thing.
Science.
Yeah.
I should go on Hammock Talk and see if there's a hammock bladder.
Where do they record that? The Hammock District?
Hammock bladder.
Yeah.
Happens all the time.
Adorable. All right, the last thing I wanted to mention. Are you guys done with Ask Metafilter? It sounded like maybe you were.
I can mention this one question in passing that seems like an interesting enough question about an allergy, but really is on my list of things that made me slightly annoyed on the internet because the title is a joke about a video game I like very much, and then it's not about
the
video game.
Which explains why I didn't understand it at all.
Yeah, XCOM UFO Unknown, or Enemy Unknown, rather, is the name of a game, and... So, anyway, XCOM Allergy Unknown. I hope Prunes
about the girlfriend whose hand swelled up after she opened the laundry, right? That's the new one?
Yep.
Yeah.
Anyway,
well,
that's all.
I just wanted to mention that Metafilter Music is celebrating another birthday.
Yes.
And so they're doing a torrent, 2.8 gigabytes from last year. I think that's all the music, and I think people are seeding it. People are downloading it. You can get all the music and have it. Thank you, Pronoyak, for doing it again. Not on display. Jim is seeding it, and a bunch of other people are. It's super cool.
Get your torrent.
Cool.
Get your pile of Metafilter music.
Three terabytes.
I still have to go listen to my CDs, but I'm very excited about this.
Wow, that's just 1 year is like three terabytes. Wow.
No, gigabytes.
That's a lot of
gigabytes.
Sorry. No, it's probably about... 32-ish. Wow. Eek. That's a lot of space.
Super cool.
Sweet.
But if that's it for you guys, I can scoot and tend to my driveway alarm. As much as it's been nice to talk to you. It's been a while.
Yeah, no, I think that's it for me.
Yeah, Metafilter's big birthday is coming up in a week.
Yeah,
I'm having a board game meetup at my house.
Excellent.
Sweet. I wish I could whatever Star Trek my way over there in an instant.
It would be super fun. You can see the pictures, though. It'll be a good time.
I think we're going to have a beery meetup at Green Dragon the weekend after the actual day, so you can just come up to Portland and, you know, have a beer.
You should do that. It's a really nice crowd there.
Sweet. I don't know what we should do on the actual Bastille Day day, but...
I'll just, I don't know, have a glass of scotch and look headboard.
Drunk and moderating.
I'll try pranking y'all all day.
Sweet.
Sweet.
All right, cool. That was great.
Good talking to you guys.
Wonderful talking to you guys, as always.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Perform, for example.